Let me pause here and see if there's some questions before we go on. Yeah, because if it's applied, then the karma is much lighter. Yeah, that's why we're trying to do purification in the evening. Yeah, also what reason for doing Nune?
Think we have the right intention.
So when we think we have the right intention, but we don't. Well, the wrong views is much more, you know, like disbelief in karma, disbelief in the potential to become a Buddha, something like that. But like, if I, you know, like let's say I sit down and I have a good talk with you about the things you're doing, you know, and I tell myself I'm doing it for your own good, okay? But actually, if I were to step back for a minute and be a little bit more aware of what's going on, there's some hostility and aggression in my mind. Okay? Then, I mean, psychologically, we would call that rationalization. Yeah. But it would be, even though we were saying, I'm doing this for the person's own good, it would be negative. Okay? But then there's a lot of things, too, that could be mixed. I mean, it's like, what flavor does this, I'm doing it for your own good, have? Is it really a complete rationalization, whitewash jobby, where it wouldn't take long to discover that underneath we're pretty aggressive? Or do we really somewhere feel like we are looking for that person's good? But still, in spite of trying to look out for that person's good, also our own anger is getting mixed in.
Yeah, anger is more like good people.
Okay, that a lot would come out of ignorance. You know, like the Inquisition, you know, what they're doing, we're preserving the holy truth for future generations, so we'll kill everybody who doesn't believe it. I mean, that's definitely ignorance. Yeah, and I think especially killing in the name of religion. To me, that would be, you know, one of the worst kinds, because it's taking something sacred and completely, you know, bringing it into the mud. Yeah, that was one thing I remembered from majoring in history. Yeah, because it struck me, you know, it's just like, one of the big things people fight about. And I think as soon as people do that, they've totally missed the point of their religion. Completely missed the point of their religion. Yeah. So in a case where, you know, like in a Buddhist country where the people are getting massacred, left, you know, to try and take up arms in order to preserve the religion. Yeah, I mean, this is one of the things His Holiness would look at, and he'd say, difficult. Real difficult. Yeah. Because, you know, I mean, I've thought about this kind of thing, too. Now I'm talking just on kind of my ruminations about it. It's like, if you start killing in order to preserve the religion, then in one way, you lose the essence of the religion. Yeah? That's, you know, because the basic fundamental thing of any religion is to abandon harming others. And if, you know, killing is the most forceful way of harming others, and that's the thing we're doing in the name of religion, it seems like you might preserve the religious institutions, but create an incredible amount of negative karma. Do this to preserve the religion. Yeah. But then the question is, are you really preserving it for other sentient beings or not? I don't know. It's hard to say. I look at His Holiness's example. I mean, His Holiness, besides the fact that the Tibetans were completely outnumbered and it was just pragmatism also, I think on His Holiness's part, it wasn't just pragmatism. Because there were a lot of Tibetans that were quite angry and upset and wanting to fight, you know, and you see pictures of, you know, I mean, they had a whole guerrilla movement going on and different things. And even some of the Tibetan young people nowadays are saying, you know, look, if we were terrorists, we would get much more international attention than we are now. So we should do this. His Holiness remains completely steadfast in the nonviolence. Yeah. And to me, I mean, that in my heart is I think where I would go too, because I kind of feel that if you start transgressing your basic ethics, you know, then you lose everything. You know, you really lose everything. So, also, it's a thing of understanding karma, because if societies are getting destroyed, I mean, we can't just say it's because of, you know, this political party or these external enemies that are doing this, but it's also because we've created the cause, you know, as a group and as individuals to suffer this result. Yeah. So it's something to look at karmically. Yeah. It's something to look at how the Buddhist institutions, like in Burma or Tibet, did they contribute to the weakness of the country so that it could be overrun and destroyed? Yeah. Were the religious institutions being very blind and not meeting the needs of the people and just preserving their own institution, thus allowing another force to come in and, you know, take control? So there's a lot of complicated things to look at here. Yeah. And then I somehow feel too that if you're a real genuine practitioner, the people who have the karma to meet the Dharma will, even if they die in this life because of persecution, they'll definitely be born in another place where they can contact the teachings and teachers. Why? Because the karmic cause is there. Whereas if you completely, you know, get involved in anger and aggression and killing and harming, you may preserve something, but you've destroyed your own karma to again meet the teachings in future lives. So it's a complicated thing, you know. It's not real simple. It's one of these things where there's no one perfect answer like we wish there were, that would solve all the problems and eliminate all doubt. You know, it's one of those situations that's just really, really difficult. Yeah. So I think as much as possible, you know, each person's going to look at it individually according to how they feel they can handle it, their own abilities, their own understanding. You know, and some people have broader views of over a longer period of time, and some people have narrower views, and many different things. Mm-hmm.
Two separate
ways of mitigating. Okay. So those kind of items where, you know, you do one, you know, let's say an example was you lie in order to protect somebody. Okay. Well, again, it's going to depend a lot on the reason you lied. Okay. In other words, if you lie out of love and compassion for that person, impartial love and compassion, not just favoritism or something like that, then it's something where it's not a complete negative action, okay? There might still be some trace of karma, but it's not going to ripen very strong. Because if you look at the example of the Buddha when he was the Bodhisattva who killed the one person who was going to kill the 499 others, okay, they say that actually he went very far ahead on the path by the power of that compassion that was willing to take the karma upon himself from having killed one person to save 499 others. Okay, so they said there was, you know, the different people have different views. Lama Zopa, when he looks at that, says there's no negative karma in what the Buddha did at all. So Kim Rinpoche says, well, the action of killing is by nature negative, so there was a tinge of negativity, you know, but the compassion motivating it was so overwhelming that there was, like, no comparison. Okay, so in other words, if let's say the lie or the, you know, the other thing that looks harmful was done, but it was done really out of compassion for everybody in the situation, not just for one party or the other, you know, then it doesn't really become a negative action. It becomes part of the bodhisattva practice. Okay? If your motivation is clean, clear. On the other hand, if your motivation isn't clean, clear, yeah, it's kind of you lie, but it's out of partiality to protect somebody, then things get a little bit more complicated. You know, it's kind of, you know, I'm lying to protect somebody's life, and that's good because I don't want this person to get killed, but I don't want this person to get killed, you know, because they mean a lot to me, and I really don't care at all about the guy who's threatening them. In fact, I wish somebody, you know, shot him as quick as possible. So, you know, if you have that kind of attitude and you're lying to protect somebody, it's going to be very different. Okay? So I think it depends a lot upon the nuances, the tone of the mind, what's all the different factors going on in the motivation there. Okay? And some things become mixed because you start off with a good motivation, but by the time you get into it, it's not so good anymore. Yeah? You know, it's kind of like, Oh, yeah, it gets very muddy. You know, one thing people do is say, you know, I'm going to take a job that earns a little bit more money, and then I'm going to make charity with the extra money. And that is really their motivation when they start out. You know, I'm going to make charity with this extra money. So that's a very good motivation. But then as they get the job and they get the bigger paychecks, all of a sudden, you know, kind of the motivation changes there, and it doesn't go for charity. It goes into, you know, one's own holiday or speedboat or something like that. Or we start out making charity with a very good motivation. I really want to help these people. But midway through, we become very conscious of, well, you know, have these people told me thank you, and have they written me down on the list of donors? Yeah, am I getting some recognition from the group for having been so generous? So, you know, the causal motivation was one of genuine generosity, but because, you know, the person wasn't mindful, then the motivation at the time of giving degenerated and it became a different one. So then it becomes, you know, something that's rather mixed. Or some actions we do, and we do have a little bit of constructive motivation. We have a little bit of destructive motivation, too, and it kind of gets all smushed together. Yeah? And so then you will get some kind of mixed result. Yeah. Again, it kind of has to do with the strength of the motivation, too. You know, because, like, If we're real clear that something is a destructive action and yet we do it, we've had to generate some extra added boost to our motivation to get over the hurdle of that part of our mind saying, now really? So. But on the other hand, having heard all of this, it gives you the possibility to mitigate the things when we're in the process of doing them, because we know the different factors. And so if we're catching ourselves in the middle of doing something, we can, oh, I better change my motivation, or I better make my motivation less intense, or I better purify afterwards, or, yeah, or this is something I do very habitually, very frequently, you know, maybe I should consider not doing that.
What kind of motivation is fear?
Okay, so people kill out of fear. I think that, yeah, self-defense. Again, you know, self-defense can be done out of fear. It can also be done out of a calm mind. Yeah, there can be different motivations for self-defense. If you take the self-defense that is done out of fear, it's very much based on attachment to one's own body. Isn't it? Yeah. You know, it's attachment. Attachment to our body, attachment to our life. Also attachment to them. You know, we don't care about the other guy's children, but we care about our own children. You know, it's very much involved with attachment. Okay? This gets real sticky. People don't always like to hear this part, you know? But it is true if you look at it. I mean, we're very attached to our bodies, and that attachment to our bodies can motivate us to do a lot of harmful things. That doesn't mean that we become dissociated from our bodies in order to overcome the attachment. It doesn't mean, you know, you just dissociate. You know, you're up here and your body's doing something else. And it doesn't mean you start to hate your body either. But I think the kind of attitude we want to try and cultivate is actually an attitude that will be very beneficial at the time we die, which is, well, it's nice while I have it, but if I'm not going to have it anymore, that's okay too. Yeah, and if we can cultivate that kind of attitude towards our body, then when it comes time to die, we're going to be able to go, you know, kind of no problem. No fear, no misery, just, yeah. But if we have this kind of clinging to our body during our life, we create a lot of negativity at the time of death, then death becomes a real traumatic, tortuous, painful thing because of the attachment. Yeah. So what we're trying to do is have a more balanced view of the body. You know, we take care of it because it's the vehicle for our Dharma practice. We can defend it. Yeah, nothing wrong with protecting our life and defending our body. But if our instant reaction is doing it out of fear, which is based on attachment, we can try, if we're a little bit mindful, to expand that. And say, you know, I'm not just going to sit here and cling to my own body, but recognize this person who's trying to harm me is creating negative action, and I'm going to try and intervene and stop them, also for their benefit, so that they don't get the negative karma. So trying to also think about the other parties involved. You know, and then if we do defend ourselves, you know, to use the minimal amount of force inflicting damage to the other person. Yeah. Because if we're like just really terrified, we're likely to, you know, just kill them. Where maybe the person, you know, they didn't have the intention to kill us, they were just gonna, you know, mug us and take your money. But out of so much fear and attachment, you kill the person. Yeah? Maybe that wasn't even necessary. Maybe it was, you know, it would have been good enough to scream or to kick them or, you know, something else. But see, if we have a lot of the attachment and fear, we don't think real clearly. If we can slowly, over a period of time, develop a real healthy relationship with our body, then when those things come up, we'll have some mental space to be able to assess it better and, you know, and do something more effective. Does that make some sense?
Yeah, I'm thinking about how to get out of the habit.
Yeah.
Why
stay in a situation where you're getting beat up?
Yeah? Well, a lot of people do.
And most of the reason they do it, again, out of attachment. Because they're getting something from that situation. Yeah? But I think if it's possible to unstick themselves from the thing that they are getting from it, then they can leave. Right. Yeah. And also take action beforehand. You know, I was talking with one woman who comes Thursday nights, and she works with battered women and domestic violence and all. And she was telling me about, because they run a group, that one woman came, you know, incredible violence in the home. And they asked her, well, what is your safety plan? And she said, well, I don't need one. You know, it's like somehow just not dealing with the situation, completely denying the danger that was there. So I think a lot in cases of domestic violence, if people can really, again, look clearly and see the danger that is there and then take effective steps beforehand, yeah, to create safe situations or create alternative plans if somebody does, you know, come home drunk and violent. Yeah. I mean, this is kind of, if we have clarity in our minds and if we stop and think a bit, we can kind of develop some clarity. But so often people are just reacting and reacting and reacting and don't have the tools like the Dharma, or don't have the time, or don't have the interest to sit and look a little bit closer and see some other things that could be done for their own benefit. Mm-hmm. Very much, very much. Yeah. I mean, when we act negatively, we don't, you know, there's this whole big movement now to take care of ourselves. You know, if we don't take that time to purify it, it does build up. And it stays with us. And this whole movement to be kind to ourselves, one way to be kind to ourselves is to be able to acknowledge our mistakes and then purify. Because if we go to the other extreme of, you know, it's always somebody else's fault, I didn't have any mistakes, then we never purify, and then there's always this residual underlying something eating away at us. Yeah? I think that's the real beauty of you know, like when you do prostrations and you're just kind of, I mean, you're there on the floor and it's like, okay, I'm gonna stop making excuses. I'm gonna stop lying to myself. I'm just gonna clean this thing up. And Nune is very powerful because it's in the month of, you know, the Buddha's enlightenment, on the day of the enlightenment, and, you know, powerful object, Chenrezi. We do lots of prostrations frequently. Yeah, everything, so. Okay, let's sit quietly.